Okay. Parshas Naso. Yeah, Parshas Naso. So our objective today is to deal with a little bit of the issues in the Parshas Naso. But before we get there, what we're going to do is speak about Isru Chag. Now, I know it's not Isru Chag anymore. Isru Chag was Sunday. However, all the Moadim, the Shalosh Regalim, have an Isru Chag. And here we are a few days later. And the idea that is the ideas that are relevant for the day directly after Yantiv, which we call Isru Chag, are also relevant for the days following the day after Yantiv. Isru Chag is not just one day theoretically, it's a concept. We're also going to speak about some interesting little halachic, you might say, curiosities that relate to Yantiv, such as Erev Tavshilin. The fact that we don't have Besamim Motzei Yantiv, and we do have Motzei Shabbos. The fact that there's no Isru Chag for Shabbos itself. And the fact that despite the fact that the Torah calls the Regalim either Regalim, Moadim, Zmanim, we've officially called them all Yom Tovim. How did that happen? What's a Yom Tov? That's our creation. That's an ancient creation, an ancient way of, you know, for the Jewish people have kind of adopted this description of the Chag as a Yom Tov. So how did that come about and what's at the core of that? And at the same time, we're also going to look a little bit into, at the end, the idea of Sota, the Isha Sota, which you know is an interesting and often very misread section of this parsha. So what we're going to do is we're going to start with the topic of the concept of Isru Chag. The pasuk that tells us that we have a mitzvah to bind the Chag without really describing what that means. Isru Chag, to bind the Chag. What does that mean to us? So the pasuk is, as you know, it says, Akel Hashem vayo'er lanu Isru Chag vavosim ad karnos hamizbeach. Two names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kel, and then Hashem. And Vayo'er Lanu, Isru Chag, basically what this means is, and the Gemara speaks about this here, the Gemara says, here's the actual Gemara, let's read it. In the Gemara in Sukkah says, the Gemara says the following, Amar Rav Yirmiya, Mishum Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shimon Hamachuzi, Mishum Rabbi Yochanan Hamachuzi. They're saying it in each other's names. Kol ha'osa isor lachag. Whoever makes an isor, some type of binding of the chag, Perush Rashi, Rashi says aguda, some type of cords, tying up the chag with cords, and aguda is knotting and cording, right? Miloshin Kesher, from tying knots, whoever binds the Chag with cords that are knotted, Ba'achila Ushtia, through eating and drinking. So, Mala Alava Kasav, so the Torah ascribes to that person that it's as if, Kilubana Mizbeach, like they built a Mizbeach, the Hikriv Olav Karbon, and brought upon that Mizbeach a Karbon. So whoever binds the Chag with cords and knots by eating and drinking, strange way to talk about enjoying the Yantiv, it's like they built a Mizbeach and brought a carbon on it, proof text, Shenemar, Isru Chag, bind up a Chag, Ba'avosim, with cords, Ad Karnos HaMizbeach, on the corners of the Mizbeach. So we're linking binding the Chag with the corners of the Mizbeach. So that's why the Gemara says, if you bind the Chag with eating and drinking, it's like you brought a carbon on the Mizbeach at its corners, where they sprinkle the blood and pour the wine. You brought a carbon. Rashi says there, it's specifically achila v'shtia. This is talking about eating and drinking. Shekori l'chag oneg, that's how you enjoy the Chag. So why doesn't it just say, enjoy the Chag with eating and drinking? What is this you know, strange terminology, bind it up until the corners of the Mizbech, and we're supposed to figure from that that you're supposed to eat and drink on Yontiv, and that's like bringing a carbon. It's just such a roundabout way to getting to, you know, getting to what Chazal are trying to tell us. Obviously, they're telling us something. So, v'yesh omrim, but others say that this is referring to Yom Shala'achar HaChag. This is referring to the day after the Chag. Now, that is really how the Rishonim Paskin in Halacha, that this is what the Pasuk is talking about when it says bind it with eating and drinking, and it's like you brought a carbon. It's talking about celebrate the day after the Chag with eating and drinking, and that's like you brought a carbon. So first of all, you brought a carbon anyway on Shavuos, the day after Shavuos, you brought a carbon anyway. But this is obviously referring to people that are celebrating Isru Chag, binding the Yontiv with an extra day of eating and drinking, who aren't able to bring carbonos, and that in itself is like bringing a carbon. Okay. So we start out with the idea that binding the Chag is celebrating it with eating and drinking, making it a festive day through enjoyment, through our own enjoyment in a sense. Our question is, what's behind that? And in order to understand what's behind that, we also begin to ask about Erev Tavshilin. What is Erev Tavshilin? So we know what it does. We know that normally there's a halacha that you cannot prepare on one day of Yontiv for the next day. The only thing is that if the next day is Shabbos, you are able to prepare on Yontiv for the upcoming Shabbos, provided, this is the concept of the Erev, you make an Erev. Now, an Erev, you know, binds, let's say, two areas, you know, so that you can carry from a Rosh HaYachid to Rosh HaRabim. It binds them together, makes, it's not really Rosh HaRabim, but it's outside of your own, Rosh HaYachid. You extend the outside area to be considered your own Rosh HaYachid, and then you can walk into that area. So that's an Erev, right? You make an Erev in a building where a lot of neighbors, you know, live together in one apartment building, so you're all kind of joined. An Erev is to extend the property, the area that you already have, and extend it further into what isn't necessarily your property, but now becomes considered your Rishos HaYachad, your private domain. So, we know that if you make an Erev before Yontiv, what that allows you to do is it allows you to extend the Yontiv really into the Shabbos. It's not like two separate days because you can't prepare on Yontiv for the next day. But if the next day is Shabbos, it binds them together and you can prepare on Yontiv for the Shabbos, provided you start preparing before Shabbos. You can't prepare on Yontiv for Shabbos if you didn't make an Erev Tavshilin before Yontiv, which means you have to start preparing before Yontiv for Shabbos in order to take advantage of Yontiv itself to cook on Shabbos. That is critical. Let's do that again. You have to prepare before Yontiv even begins for the following Shabbos in order to take advantage of the leniency to cook on Yontiv for Shabbos. If you didn't make an Erev Tavshilin before Yontiv in the weekday, you can't utilize Yontiv to cook for Shabbos. You're stuck. You have to go into Shabbos with nothing. Okay, so this never happens because the Rav does the Erev Tavshilin, but the concept behind it is critical. Okay, so in order to understand Isru Chag and Erev Tavshilin, we go to a famous piece of Moshe Shapira brings down from the Maharal. The Maharal is often who we turn to for, you know, to peel away the layers underneath these ideas and help us understand what's going on. So the Maharal in Netzach Yisrael says, the concept is that we all know that Shabbos is Me'ein Olam Haba. It's a taste of, a glimpse into Olam Haba. So what is Yontiv? Yontiv is also in that category, but not Shabbos. So he says that Yontiv is a moment, not of Olam Haba, but of Yemos HaMashiach. So that's two different things. Yemos HaMashiach precedes Olam Haba. Now let's get into the end of days. So there are five eras that are part of the end of days. Okay. By the way, in my grandfather's Tefillah Sefer of Shavuot prayer, if you look at the five Hallelujahs after Ashrei, those five Hallelujahs, which are the last five Kapitlach in Tehillim, are about the last five eras of the end of days. That's why David ends with them, and they're called the crowning glory of Hallel, of all the Tishbachos and all the praises that David ever sang. The last five are the end. So the five periods of the end of days are our era, which we hope is the pre-dawn era, prior to the coming of Mashiach, right before the dawn. Then comes what is called Bias HaMashiach, the era of the coming of Mashiach. Then comes Yemos HaMashiach, the days of Mashiach. Then comes Tchiyas HaMesim, way after. And Ayin Lo Rasa, no one ever saw it, no Navi ever prophesied about it. We have no information past the days of Yemos HaMashiach. And following Tchiyas HaMesim, the resurrection, comes the last and final era, which is called Olam HaNishamot. And we have no idea what it's about. It's entirely non-physical. It's Olam HaNishamot, the world of Nishamot. So the five eras are the pre-dawn era, the era of Biyat HaMashiach, the coming of Mashiach, Yemot HaMashiach, the days of Mashiach, with the Beis HaMikdash and the Jews in Eretz Yisrael, and no more war, and no more famine, and no more disease, and no more poverty, and all of the good things. And everybody serving a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and everything straight and right. Then Tchiyas HaMesim, which we have no idea what that's all about. And then Olam HaNeshamos. When we say Shabbos is Me'ein Olam Haba, we're speaking about the connection between Shabbos and Olam HaNeshamos, the end, the tachlis, the final destination, the final goal, Olam HaNeshamot, the world of the Neshamos. When we're talking about the Chagim, the Shalosh Regalim, the Maral says, they don't give us a sense of Olam HaNeshamos, that's for Shabbos. The Chagim are about the Yemos HaMashiach, the days of Mashiach. Now, what is the objective of the days of Mashiach, being that it precedes, it's even precedes Tchiyas HaMesim, and certainly precedes Olam HaNeshamos. It's a step along the way. It's not the end. Yemos HaMashiach is a step along the way. So the Maral explains that the Yemos HaMashiach have a very particular purpose. The purpose of Yemos HaMashiach, and Rambam speaks about this, and we've read it here in class. We'll talk about it in Hilchas Tshuva. The time of Yemos HaMashiach is a time where we get to a point where we no longer struggle with all the distractions and problems that we have now. Rambam says everything in the time of Yemos HaMashiach is similar to what we have now, but there is no more Shibud Malchus, nobody oppresses us, there's no war, there's no threats, not all our money and not all our brains to go into the military and into weaponry and into defense. But all that potential and all that talent goes into Torah and mitzvos and learning, and we're not bothered with crime, and we're not bothered with illness, and we're not bothered with poverty, and we're not bothered with anything. It's a time period that we have peace of mind. The Beis HaMikdash is built. We live in Eretz Yisrael. We go through the life cycle like real Jews, not like today, which people, if they were at the time of the Beis HaMikdash, would be resurrected and join us here, wouldn't know what to do with themselves and how we're living and what we're doing. It's all different. So many mitzvahs are butzel, so much of our lifestyle doesn't exist. So we go back, we live there, everybody understands who we are, our lagayim, the nations of the world, do tshuva, stream to Eretz Yisrael, bring karbanos in our Beis HaMikdash, do whatever they can to support and build up and strengthen the Jewish people. This is Yemos HaMashiach. What's the point of it? Not for itself, so we can just sit back and relax. The whole point of Yemos HaMashiach is to give people an opportunity to use that time to prepare for Olam HaNeshamos, for Tchiyas HaMesim and Olam HaNeshamos, to get people into an opportunity where they can develop themselves in Ruchnius and live fully as Jews so that they can earn the zechus, the merit of Tchiyas HaMesim, and the merit of Olam HaNeshamos. Because here, the way things are now, we understand, Chazal understand, we don't have the freedom and the peace of mind and the opportunity to develop ourselves spiritually. We are so distracted by so many things that come into our lives that we go through 70, 80 years and get very little accomplished. We need a time period where this is our only focus, so we can be ra'oy, merit, the upcoming stages. So Yemos HaMashiach are not for, it's not the end, that oh, now we can relax, now we can enjoy. It's for it's an opportunity for the next stage. That is Yemos HaMashiach. The Maral explains, this is really from Rav Moshe Shapiro, that that's a secret to Erev Tavshilin. The problem is you can't fall into Yemos HaMashiach without any preparation. Yemos HaMashiach is a continuation of what people were doing here. If people here were trying to the best of their ability to spend whatever time they had, whatever energy they had after they took care of their daily needs and all the other mishigasim in our lives, to try to come to know HaKadosh Baruch Hu and do what's right, then Yemos HaMashiach gives them an opportunity to really focus on that. But one cannot fall into Yemos HaMashiach with no preparation, because then the Chazal say these are days, asher ein bahem chefetz, there's no way to start then, accumulating zchuyot and mitzvot, you can't start in Yemos HaMashiach. And then there's nothing for Shabbos, there's nothing for the final stages. You have to start before Yemos HaMashiach. This is the concept of Erev Tavshilin. You must prepare Erev Yantiv, which means throughout history, in order to be able to utilize Yantiv, Yom Tov, in order to prepare for Shabbos. That's really the secret behind Erev Tavshilin. You cannot fall into Yemos HaMashiach unprepared. It will be an era in the course of human history. People will live at that point. Now, why this generation lives then and not some other generation and how that works, we don't know. But there will be a whole lifestyle going on in Yemos HaMashiach. The scary part is, people that are not prepared to utilize the benefits of Yemos HaMashiach won't be able to. By the way, it's the same thing in our lives. There are people, and sometimes for some people at certain periods of their life, things are in order. Parnas is in order. Health is in order. No major issues. No major conflicts. Right? Peace of mind. Certain periods in people's lives. Right? Peace of mind. An ability to really take advantage of all the bracha and do something great with it. But if a person is not mukhan, ready and prepared with that as their goal, then they'll squander that entire blessing, spend their time on nothing, spend their time, you know, on things that are unproductive, and waste the opportunity completely. We see it in our own lives. So just because opportunity is presented doesn't mean somebody will take advantage of it unless they're mukhan, they're prepared for it. So the whole concept of Erev Tavshilin is one must prepare for the opportunity to prepare for the end of days, for your most, what we call Shabbos or Olam HaNeshamos. So one has to be ready to take advantage of the opportunities afforded by what we consider Yontiv, which is or also better times in our lives. This brings us back to the concept of Isru Chag. Bind up the Yontiv with cords, knots, in other words, not loosely, really tie it up tight so you can't escape. Why? How do you do that? By eating and drinking. When? We paskin, most of the Rishonim, according to one of the views that the Gemara brings down. The day after Yontiv, bind up the Yontiv, continue the Yontiv, and that's like you brought a carbon on the Mizbech. Now, hopefully, we begin to understand what that means. When the Yontiv is upon us, that's a glimpse into Yemos HaMashiach. It's chatzi li, chatzi lachem, part for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, part for us, right? We have three regalim, Pesach, Sukkos, and Shavuos, the basic concepts of our progression through our life. Pesach is the bechira, the choice of us from the others, our acceptance of our position that we're designated for a big future, recognizing our tafkid. Shavuos, we'll speak about this more, is Kabbalah's all accepting that yoke. It's one thing if a person realizes that they have certain potential, that they're chosen from among the rest for greatness, which is Klal Yisrael in each individual person. It's a whole nother madrega to be makabel that responsibility, because being makabel means you bind yourself to a role that you can play. But not everyone always wants to play the role, and sometimes the role is very, very demanding. And one of the al-chetz on Yom Kippur is prikas ol, throwing off the yoke. There are many, many burdens on people's shoulders that they can rise up to the challenge and fulfill their responsibilities and be makabel that reality, that these are their responsibilities, whether they like it or not. And living up to them will bring out their greatness. But sometimes people just want to drop their responsibilities, turn their back on it, prikas ol, throw off the yoke. So the acceptance of the Torah, it's not just Shavuos, isn't just Matan Torah, that Hashem gave it to us. It's Kabbalah Satorah. That's what we did. We were Makabel it. And then, of course, is the idea of Sukkis, which teaches us that despite the fact that we fall and we sin, as you know, the Anani HaKavod abandoned us by the Cheda Egel, you know that the Gra says we celebrate Sukkis after Yom Kippur, not after Pesach, because we're not Stam celebrating the Anani HaKavod, we're celebrating their return when we got Kapara, when Hashem said Salachti, which was Yom Kippur, for the Egel. So that is the idea, that we can rest assured that we have a guarantee from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that once we did our job of recognizing that we're chosen for a tafkid, accepting the yoke that Hashem promises us, that even if we mess up and even if we, fall, we are guaranteed slicha, mechila, if we do tshuva, and we'll be regathered in the sukkah, right, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we'll continue along the path of our destination, and we won't lose that opportunity. We can make a mistake, but we can always repair it. That's the final chag. So each one of these chagim, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkis, remind us, restore us with the energy, and the point is to take the yantiv, which brings us to, which has the opportunity to remind us of Yemos HaMashiach and our constant pursuit of that time, that we're always on the path to deserve to live at that time and utilize that time. Take the yantiv. Don't let it just be a moment that was inspiring and then it goes away and we don't think about it till the next yantiv. But celebrate the next day. In other words, extend it into the next day. Bind it up. Celebrate the next day as part of the yantiv, which basically means to say, take the yantiv itself, the moed, okay, and turn it into what we call a zman, a regel, or yom tov. Now, we've spoken about this. What is moed, zman, regel, and yom tov? So, we've done this, right? Does it jog your memory a little bit? The way it's described in the Torah is either as a regel, shalosh pamei ragleinu, the three steps of our feet, or, as we say in the bracha, Mekadesh Yisrael v'hazmanim, in the Torah it says, Elehem moadai. These are my moadim. So a moed, like when you're on the El Al plane, and it says zman, the time to the destination, liya'ad, a moed is a destination. It's where you get to. The moadim are the destination. It's a glimpse of the destination, Yemos HaMashiach, days of pleasant days, where your food is prepared, and you're even allowed to prepare your food, and you learn, and you do mitzvahs, and you eat. That it's a glimpse into Yemos HaMashiach. No work and no trouble, and you're supposed to be in a state of simcha, right? V'samachta b'chagecha, be in a state of simcha. It's like Yemos HaMashiach. You just do the right thing. Everything's set up like a set table to take advantage and spend the time in increasing your zchuyos, your learning, and all of that, your mitzvahs. So it's a moed. It's a glimpse at the destination. However, in the bracha that we make in Kiddush, we say, Mekadesh Yisrael v'hazmanim, or we call it the Shalosh Regolim, because we pick up on those words, really. We don't say good moed, usually, unless we're talking about Chol HaMoed, by the way, but on the yantiv itself. You can think about that. That's pretty obvious why you dafka refer to the chol part as the moed. It's the same type of idea we're speaking about. But we call it a zman or a regel, because zman comes from the word lahazmin, hazmana, to prepare. Hareini muchan umizuman. I am prepared. We recognize that the opportunity of yantiv, which gives us a glimpse into the destination of Yemos HaMashiach, for us, it's an opportunity to prepare here for that time, to take that chag, to take that moed, and for us celebrate it and extend it now with Isru Chag, not just one day, but really all through the year, so that it becomes the whole Zman is a time of opportunity, of preparation, so that when that moed really arrives, we're ready. We don't just fall into it unprepared, in which case we can't take advantage of it. That's why it's called a regel. We're striding forward. We are striding forward to a future time, and this Yontiv gives us the opportunity to like keep it in mind, to experience it for a moment, so that we remember what we're striding towards. Now, remember one time we spoke about this, where Meir Shapiro goes back to the famous idea of the eight pre-Osep pre. Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Gan Eden, this should be very familiar to you by now, says the tree should be a fruit and bear fruit, right? But what happened? You know what happened. The tree was not a fruit, but it did bear a fruit. So that the taste of the tree was not the taste of the fruit. That's a tremendous yesod. It's a fundamental concept about life. It's a fundamental concept about life here. The idea is that when we go through the process which will lead to the fruit, in other words, the trunk, the branches, everything up until the fruit, the process that will lead to the bearing of the fruit, we live in a world where that process is not the fruit itself and doesn't taste like the fruit. Right? The process itself does not have the taste of the fruit. The eights doesn't taste like the fruit. The branches and the trunk and then the buds and then the leaves. Nothing tastes like the fruit, just the fruit itself. Except the esrog. You know that, right? The esrog bark tastes like the esrog. Some say the eitz hadas was one of the trees was an esrog. In any case, there's a lot of things what that eitz hadas is. It was a fig, it was grapes, it was wheat, it was an esrog. However you need to use it, you can find something that'll help you. In any case, in general, trees do not taste like their fruit, which really is a fundamental concept that here in this world, no, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not give us a reality where the mitzvahs we do every day and the yoke we take upon ourselves every day has within it the full flavor of the ultimate fruit, the destination. No, we don't see when we're doing a mitzvah the schar we're going to get in the next world for it. We don't really glimpse that. We don't really appreciate it. If we appreciated what we were doing, we would do it 1,000 times faster with 1,000 times more intensity. We don't. We know it's an obligation and it's good and it will lead us to a great future, but it doesn't have the full flavor of the future. However, what we're supposed to do is try as best as we can through learning and through modeling and experiencing and beautifying the mitzvahs and making the mitzvahs special and fun and developing them in any way we can with our creativity. We are supposed to try to invest the process, the going through the lifestyle of a Jew and all the mitzvahs we do every day and all the learning, we're supposed to try to invest it with a bit of the tam, as much as we can, a bit of the taste of the future, of the schar. That's our job, to make the mitzvahs beautiful, to really appreciate them, to learn about them, to understand them, so we do them with enthusiasm and with love and with excitement, so they have a bit of the taste of the future. So that's the same concept as zman. To be hareini muchan u'mezuma, I'm preparing here. I'm bringing into this moment a little bit of the taste of the future. I'm supposed to do that. So when we have a regel, and we realize this yontiv gives us a glimpse of Yemos HaMashiach. And also, if we understand the power of Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos, and what we've accepted on those days, and what we've really, the lifestyle we've chosen to bind ourselves to, and we go through that process again on the Yom Tovim, and we utilize that and bind that to the following days of the year, we are investing the process with a taste of the end, and that brings us to the end. As we said, if a person doesn't make an Erev Tavshilin prior to Yontiv, if we don't start preparing before Yemos HaMashiach, we will squander the whole time of Yemos HaMashiach, as people right here, right now, squander the best parts of their lives where they're free, without distraction, to really do good things, and it's wasted on Narishkeit. On just, all kinds of forms of unproductive behavior. And then there are times in a person's life where there's just no opportunity to really achieve that much in certain ways because they're so distracted with things and busy, and then we feel bad that we didn't take advantage of the quiet moments. So this is a little bit of the Isru Chag and the Erev Tafshil. And now we get to the next point. Besamim. No besamim, it seems, that's the really the Ramban seems to say, we know we don't do besamim after Yantiv. The question is why. So we know why we do it after Shabbos. After Shabbos, we are feeling the loss of the Neshama Yisera. Okay, stop. We've worked with these topics. Smelling something to make up for the loss of the Neshama, where does that bring us back to? Of course, Vayipach Ba'apo Nishmas Chayim. Right? The Neshama is, we said, associated with the smell. Do you remember what we said about smell? Smell is the one sense processed directly by the middle brain, by the limbic system, as opposed to all the other senses. They are, go through relay stations before they hit their final processing point. Smell goes straight in, and a person responds to smell in the limbic kind of way, which is with a gut reaction, an emotional reaction, a sense of instinctual reaction. It's not learned information. It's a knowledge that comes from the inside. When a person smells something that they haven't smelled in a long time, brings them right back to that moment. Notice, for example, in Yom Kippur, if somebody's getting faint, you don't show them a bright color or scream into their ear a loud noise. It's a smell. It revives the neshama. So when there's a neshama yisera on Shabbos, now what does a neshama yisera mean? An extra quality to the neshama. Let's understand what that means. The neshama and the smell. We said that originally, we said this before Yantav when we spoke about Shavuos and the ancestry of David HaMelech, right, and the women. There's two types of knowledge. There's learned information that goes through the Seichel and the Chachma, and then there's gut instinctual knowledge that you just know because it's all over, it's self-evident, it's the reality. You just know it. For example, on the Yam, Ze Keli V'Anvehu, this is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They just, right, it's nothing you had to be taught. By the way, Rambam in the Morning Buchim says that the first two Dibros, Anochi Hashem Elokecha and Lo Yelocha Elohim Acherim, Rambam based on Psukim and Devarim, which we'll get to and we'll bring this up again, explains in the Mora that the Jews apprehended these truths in the same way as Moshe Rabbeinu himself, the first two Dibros, and didn't hear words, but knew the fact from what they experienced from the revelation, and the fact was Anochi Hashem and Lo Yielach Elohim Acherim. Later on, Moshe said to them, if you want words to describe that experience, the words are Anochi Hashem Elokecha and Lo Yielach, but at the moment of the experience, they didn't hear the words, they knew it. That's the same type of what we're talking about. That's the instinct, that's the basic knowledge of the neshama. You just know something because it's pervasive, it's self-evident, without being taught. So the Neshama Yisera of Shabbos is supposed to be, and you see that, of course, is always major concept of preparation for Shabbos. Always. Kavod Shabbos, as Rambam goes into a whole discussion of Kavod Shabbos and Oneg Shabbos. Kavod Shabbos is all of the preparation. Oneg Shabbos is the actual celebration of Shabbos itself. A huge emphasis on preparation for Shabbos, which takes into account the Moadim, obviously, are preparing for Shabbos. The extra neshama of Shabbos is that place of existence, of being, where we just know the emes. We feel it. It's part of our, it's in every fiber of our being. No one has to teach us anything. We just know there's the purpose of the world, the tachlis of the world, to know HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to serve Hashem b'simcha, to know that all the other things that distract us are just smoke screens, and to focus on what's the reality. That's the extra awareness we have on Shabbos. That's the neshama yisera, from the instinct. When that goes away, then you need besamim. So why don't we need besamim on Motzei Yantiv? And Moshe Shapiro brings down, there's a little bit of a machlokis on that, and says the following, that the Gemara, the Talmud states that on Shabbos, is the Gemara in Beitza, an additional part of our soul radiates within us, and when Shabbos departs, the added soul departs as well, To revive the soul that remains with us from the lack it feels due to the departing of the added soul, we smell fragrances. Tosfos asserts that on the festival we do not receive an added soul, and therefore it is unnecessary to smell fragrances when the festival departs. But according to the Ramban, the author states it's a sefer called in English Faith and Trust. It's attributed to the Ramban. He states that we certainly do receive an added soul on the Yontif, but it does not leave us after the Chag. So he argues on the Tosfos. He says no, there is definitely a neshama yisera on Yontif, but the reason you don't need besamim is because it never leaves. How do we make sure that the neshama yisera that we experience on Yontif never leaves? That's Isruchag. That's the concept of Isruchag, that what we experienced on Yontif, it gives us a little bit more of the tam during the process, stays with us because we extend the Yontif into the following weekdays. Shabbos, you cannot extend beyond Shabbos. Why? Shabbos is not a regil. Shabbos is not a part of a process. Shabbos has nothing to do with Zman and regil and bringing the taste into the moment here. Shabbos is not any of those. Shabbos is the destination. If you look in Emor, right, Hashem said to Moshe, speak to Bnei Yisrael, Eileheim Moadai. These are my Moadim. What's the next pasuk? Shabbos. And then it goes into the Moadim. Shabbos is considered the first of the Moadim in Emor. Go check back in Emor. Eileheim Moadai, Sheshes Yamim Tavod. Shabbos is the ultimate Moed. You cannot extend Shabbos. Shabbos is not a process. Shabbos is the destination, the tachlis of it. We feel the void of the neshama yisera, so we give ourselves, we revive ourselves to remind us of what we are missing because we don't have Shabbos. But Shabbos is where you get to; it's the end of the process. Whereas the moadim are the process, the regalim, the zman. We extend them, we keep them going, we work them into our day-to-day lives. This brings us into the next idea, which is why we lovingly refer to all the chagim as Yom Tovim. We don't really say regalim, good regel, good zman, good moed, except chol ha-moed, because we want to keep the moed in the chol. We call them Yom Tov. What is the secret behind Yom Tov? Well, Tov is a very interesting word. But before we get into Tov, we have to speak about a code form of writing that Chazal employ at certain points. It's called Atbash. Now, what is that? It's very simple code. If you were in charge of decoding things, you would, you know, you figure it out. It's like, it's not exactly, you know, complicated. Atbash is, instead of using the aleph, you use the tav. You work from the end of the alphabet. Instead of the bays, you use the shin. Guess where you meet in the middle? Chaf and lamed. No. Okay, cool. Now, what is atbash? What's the point? So again, Ramesh Shapiro unpeels the layers, telling us what is going on here. What is the point of atbash? Because if you do a tov in atbash, you'll see what you get to. We'll do that in a minute. But what's the point of Atbash? So look, I stand up here at 10 o'clock, and I know what I'm going to say. And I go step by step through the process of telling it to you, right? Conveying it from my thoughts goes into your thoughts. Till I get to the end, okay, you do not have the full picture of what I'm going to say. You don't see how all the pieces fit together. I have to go through the process, and then when we get to the end of the process, then retroactively, everything from the beginning falls into place. Especially if you build a class where you ask all the questions, bring all the interesting conflicts, and then drop the answer at the end, and everything falls into place, right? But everybody gets too confused along the way, so you have to, you know, keep the solution as part of, you know, the answer as part of the, you know, alongside the questions a little bit. But the point is, we know that in not just in terms of learning, understanding, you know, periods in people's lives retroactively. You know, understanding decisions people make retroactively. Everything is so much clearer retroactively. You stand up in a difficult situation, you're flustered, you don't know quite how to handle it. You go through it, you make the best decisions you can. Then when you have the time to think about it, you think, oy, I should have done it this way and that way, answered this, said that, explained this and done that. And you know, but now in retrospect, you know, 20/20 vision, everything makes sense. And then the next time, you're smarter. The secret of At Bash is, there's Aleph through Tav. That's the process. That's step A, B, C. And you have to go through that process slowly, carefully, from the beginning to the end. But only in reverse, Tav back to Aleph, do you really understand what was going on from Aleph to Tav. Now, in terms of Jewish history, that's certainly how it's going to work. No question. Days will come where everything that we went through will make sense. That's the Nechama of Nachamu Nachamu. Nechama is a total change of perspective. That's really the definition of Nechama. To see things from a completely different perspective. That really is the, that is how the word Nechama is used. But we'll maybe talk about that on the Shabbos Nachamu. But the point of At Bash is to tell you that whatever something is in Aleph to Tav, turn it around, read it backwards, and you'll see the destination. You'll see what it leads to. You'll see the tachlis, the purpose, the goal. Well, Tov in At Bash, restarting backwards, okay, Tov is the reverse of Nefesh. Nefesh in At Bash is Tov. So what does that mean? Everybody starts out, the basic raw material of our life is the nefesh. We've spoken about this. The body force. Vayipach ba'apo, vayitzar Hashem Elokim et Adam, afar min hadama, right? Vayipach ba'apo nishmas chayim, right? And the Adam was? The Adam lenefesh chaya. Nefesh. The lowest brain, remember we did it? Reptilian brain. The body, the blood, adamu anefesh. The life force. The physical, the material, the raw material, the chomer. We've worked with all these concepts. That is nefesh. Nefesh is the raw material we're given, and it's all for a tachlis. It all has a goal. If it's used properly, it leads in the end to tov. Tov is the part of the destination. Shabbos, Yom Shekulo Tov. It's a glimpse of the future, Yom Shekulo Tov. Now we call the moedim, the regalim, Yom Tov. They're also part of that destination, the Yemos HaMashiach. What will get a person there? The physical material that we're working with. The mundane, finite, death-bound, afar dirt that we're given to work with. That can be, by a human being's choice, being Makabel Ol, accepting the yoke, turn into Tov. The process starts with the person, with us, with our regular, average, everyday person. Can take the destination, the ultimate moed, and the first destination, Yemos HaMashiach, which gives an opportunity to earn Shabbos, Olam HaNeshamas, and right here, right now, invest our days with that vision, spend our time right, use our energy correctly, be in the process of the regel, of striding forward, of making the process take life, taste like the end, keeping the end in mind, what that really means, appreciating the end enough to invest the moment with purpose, and keep the moed go, Isru Chag, bind the moed, prepare for that time now, and turn this process right here into Tov, Yom Tov, working with the Nefesh. These ideas are all associated with, you know, they all revolve around the basic perspective of the Jew, you know, that everything here is part of the tachlis. Tov, by the way, the word tov always means, when it's used carefully, not just throwaway, it was used by Chazal and used in the Torah, tov means it will lead to the end, to the tachlis. That's what tov means. It will, has the ability to achieve the destination. Ra comes from the word ra'ua, which means broken. The Chazal, it's used as a broken ladder. You can't climb it. Okay? Or a missed chance, a chance that will not lead, an opportunity or a situation that will not lead to a tachlis, is ra. Broken. not able to be utilized. Tov always means it will be utilized, it could reach a tachlis. Ra means it can't. So anything that we spend our time with that's called ra is something that doesn't lead to a tachlis. Now, in the last few minutes, I just want to focus on a concept in Nusso, which is regarding the sota. Okay, and we've spoken about the sota many times, but I really just want to mention this again, just some of the facts and associated with what we're speaking about, because it is so subject to misinterpretation simply by not reading the pshat. Forget about the chazals. Just the pshat itself is not read. The only case in which a sota can happen, okay, listen carefully, and you should remember this, we always stress this. In the only situation a sota can happen is the following, and this is in the psukim, I can't go through, we don't have the time for the psukim now, but just take out a hirsh or any, you know, English Hebrew with a little explanation. This is when a sota can happen, okay? A sota happens when there's a woman who is behaving obviously in a way that it causes some suspicion from her husband that things are not right. He warns her specifically in front of witnesses not to be in a state of yichud, which means in a locked room with no windows, totally secluded where nobody can see her. He warns her not to be in that situation with that particular man. By the way, a husband never has to warn a woman if he trusts her or if she's above reproach. This is a case where he warns her, do not be alone with that man, and he warns her for kosher eden. After the warning, she goes in front of witnesses, and she is secluded in a locked room, you know, in a situation where there is no way to have witnesses, with that man. The halacha, for enough time that she could have been, as the Torah says, mitame, she could have had relations. The problem is, under those circumstances, she is usher to go back to her husband. He's not allowed to resume relate marriage with her because there's a possibility that she committed adultery. But nobody knows because there's no witnesses. So he could divorce her. She could take a divorce. That's option A. But let's say he doesn't want to divorce her and she doesn't want to ask for a divorce. And they would like to resume their marriage. And she goofed and she feels bad and she wants to stay married. But she's not. The marriage may not resume because maybe she committed adultery, and maybe she's pregnant, and maybe he won't know who the children are, and maybe they'll be mamzerim, and there's no trust between them. So it's an impossible situation, and it's only in the case where the marriage wants to continue. So what happens is he brings her not to a court, and he can't hit her, and he can't kidnap her, and he can't do any physical damage to her, and he can't divorce her. He doesn't want to divorce her, and she doesn't want to be divorced. If either one wants to be divorced, the case is settled. They want to be married. He brings her before a kohen, not before a court. And through a miraculous situation where they take water from the kiyar, which is used to be mekadesh, the avod of the kohanim, to sanctify the service of the kohanim, and they put it in an earthenware vessel to imply that this is the lowest form of behavior and how unfortunate this is. And you know what a humiliation it is for a man to have his wife have to go through this ordeal. It means that, you know, she wasn't faithful to him, whatever it was. Then they erase into the water the threats that they read to her, that if you are tummy, if you committed adultery, which means nothing but the actual consummation. Anything else doesn't count here. Consummation. If you did something in that time where there were witnesses that you were alone and nobody saw what happened, then you will die. The water will go into you and your body will be dismembered. But if you're innocent, innocent doesn't mean lily white. You didn't consummate the act. You did a lot of really bad things, but you didn't do the worst thing. You will have bracha, zera, shokayama, children like Avraham Avinu. Now, here's the most important thing. The sota ordeal is completely voluntary. Nobody is forced to go through sota. You choose to do it. You do not have to. If a woman is guilty, she says, I'm not drinking, and that's it, done, but they have to be divorced. She can't go back to her husband. If the woman says, I'm not guilty, the husband says, I want to believe you, but I have no option. I can't resume marriage with you unless you go through sota. So this is a case where it's voluntarily done to preserve the marriage. It's a huge humiliation for everybody involved, obviously, but it's in a no-option situation. And because she goes through that bizayon, even though she created the suspicion and she forced this problem in a way, she gets all the brachas. The one thing I want to focus on is part of the ingredients that mixes into the water, besides the threats, the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself that are written on those threats, and the water from the kiar, is they pick up a tile inside the mikdash. When you walked into the Heichal, there was a designated tile that was detached from the other tiles on the floor. They took dirt, afar, from the mikdash, and they sprinkled it on top of the water. And Chazal say here, Umin ha'afar, lama afar, Amar Rabbi Meir, Lefisha notzar mimenu adam harishon. What we're saying here, Meir saying is, everybody knows that man is made from afar, and man has a nefesh. And the nefesh makes you do stupid things, because here it says, in the beginning, by Davro Hashem al Moshe Lamer, Davro al B'nei Yisrael v'yamarta lehem, ish ish, any man, ki tiste ishto. Ki tiste, which means she strayed. But Chazal say, tiste is associated with the word shtuyot. Ein adam chote, nobody sins, if not previously, shenichnas bo ruach shtus. Foolishness, a loss of vision of the future, a loss of vision of a person's tafkid, a loss of sense of correctness of what I'm here for, what my nefesh is supposed to live for, that my nefesh becomes tov, just total, you know, total confusion and shtuyot, insanity. You forget what the nefesh is all about. So they take the afar, because adam is afar min hadama, same thing, the nefesh. They sprinkle into the water. The water is the highest madrega. They actually sprinkle it on top. They don't mix it in. Hirsch says to show that this is a case where the nefesh of a person should remain like the outer skin, but not become the person's identity. Should remain on the surface, not become how the person operates, you know, that they're strictly a human animal. But it's there as a, you know, to house their neshama, and to house the higher aspects. And they make her drink this water with this afar. And we said, if she's guilty, so who guilty would ever drink? Nobody. Nobody guilty will ever drink. That's the point of the sota. Why would somebody drink if they're guilty? And by the way, you say, okay, maybe they didn't believe the sota waters would work. But you want to know something? This was such a miraculous type of procedure. Just like tzaras, they link it to tzaras. That when the Shekhinah was not among Klal Yisrael, they stop doing sota. It only works when there's a high level of Hashem's presence among people. Once people fell, Madrega Lo fell, and in general they stopped, so all the miraculous aspects of our lifestyle were no longer at, you know, we didn't have them anymore at our service, you know, at our disposal. So they stopped doing the sota. It's only when Klal Yisrael was on a high level. So at that point, nobody would drink if they were guilty. They would just get a divorce. End of story. Maybe that was a tragedy and they wish they hadn't made a mistake, but that's how it had to end. But if somebody wasn't guilty, this was the only solution, and the combination of the afar and the mayim reminded a person, of course people make mistakes, but the good side is if you're not guilty of the final consummation, which means you a lot of mistakes up to that point, but but still you're a shemayim. You didn't fall completely. You watched yourself. You understood there's something bigger than yourself. So you're not a lost cause. So then you have all the brachos. You give. You have children that binds the marriage back together, etc. It lets you start over. And the nefesh that brought you down is elevated through the mayim. And, you know, you resume your striding forward towards the end. Many people fall and start over and pick themselves up. That's life. As long as we're always in the process of moving forward. The main idea is that we have to make sure that we don't arrive at Yemos HaMashiach in shock. That we're already very much in the process of getting there. Okay. Have a good week, everyone.